Hello, developers, and welcome to the PHP Architect Community Corner, where we have conversations with members of the web development community. I'm your host, Scott Keck Warren, and today we're talking with Naya Lucky about her talk at the PHP Tech 2026 conference that's happening later this year, which is on the Trust Protocol. Naya Lucky is a cybersecurity executive, author, and speaker focusing on trust, resilience, and leadership in an era of constant disruption. With a background spanning military service and senior advisory roles in CISO and CIO organizations, she helps leaders navigate complex security, AI, and risk challenges with clarity and accountability. Naya is the co-author of the CISO Playbook and the author of Trust Hacked, and her TED Talk, The Trust Protocol, reframes trust as a system that must be intentionally designed, tested, and owned. She is known for translating technical risks into executive action and for challenging the assumption that trust automatically follows technology, scale, or compliance. Thank you so much, Naya, for finding some time to talk to us today.
Good morning, Scott. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So you kind of came onto my radar because you're going to be the opening keynote at PHP Tech 2026. You're going to be talking about the Trust Protocol. Can you kind of give us like a brief overview of what your talk is going to be about and what the Trust Protocol is?
Absolutely. So I'm trying to take the tech jargon out of the conversation. But as we all know in tech, we have three core principles that we really follow. We have authentication, we have encryption, and we have resilience. And those of us that have been in cyber a while, that we're very familiar. I flip the narrative to behavior with those three pillars still in mind. So the Trust Protocol challenges leaders to be authentic. That's what we mean by authentication. By encryption, it means developing trusted safe spaces where I can come to you with my concerns and not fear judgment or retaliation. And what this does over time, Scott, what we've learned is when you can develop trust and you show up authentically with consistency, your team becomes more resilient. You become more resilient as a leader, and thereby it's a byproduct. And that's basically the essence to remind us in an ever-evolving landscape of cyber, innovation, threat, right? This is what it's going to take in order to bring AI, quantum, and where we're trying to go to the next level, right? As levels of distrust increase in technology, our levels of trust within our teams and ourselves must increase because we need to work together. That's where the solution for this lies.
Yeah, really, I like that concept of like a safe space to bring up problems, because I know that like I've worked for companies before where that hasn't existed, where I'm just kind of like, well, this is a security problem, and they're like, And then eventually it does bite us. You know what I mean? Like, and so I think that like that's an important piece. Like, so how do you ever work with people directly to kind of like what are the frameworks that you kind of like, or the, I don't know, framework probably is not the right word. How is it that safe space exists like within a team? Like, what does that look like?
I think it starts with the leader, right? So if you are a people manager versus an individual contributor, which is where you more manage the work and not the people. But if you are in a people manager role, it starts with you, right? It starts with each of us being that living example of what authenticity and what accountability looks like. If I've noticed a pattern, a behavioral pattern of shirking responsibility or shirking accountability or consistent, persistent delegation of authority and decision-making, that's a red flag. We need leaders to lean into the big R of the RACI and what they're truly responsible for at the end of the day. Because along with that is the well-being of your team members. And that's more coming from my time in the military. Some of the best leaders I served under, they were people first. They were service first oriented. How can I help? Without being overly empathetic. And then last year, 2025, I kind of came across this concept of, well, it was two concepts, right? We had psychological safety was everywhere, across every stage. We talked about it at Cyber Bay. I've continued to hear ripples of it even today. The second that I've heard coming out of some of my other fellow, like just mentors and people that I follow in our spaces, is this concept of cognitive dissonance. And what this teaches us is we often say things that we want to aspire to and we want to believe are true, not just about ourselves, but about the organizations we support. The issue, Scott, is that our behaviors are not in alignment. So it's like saying, hey, I'm healthy, but also saying, I smoke cigarettes. Right?
Yeah, and like,
both things can be true, but the behaviors are not in alignment to make the first statement factual.
You know, I have worked in a lot of situations where there is that cognitive dissonance. Like, I love that as a term. Like, I like both of those terms that you just said, but I want to talk about the cognitive dissonance first. It's because, like, I've worked in places where, like, leadership has said one thing, but then the actual culture is totally different, right? They're like, we have a culture of this. And then you actually go and you work there and you're like, well, no, it's like a toxic work environment, right? Like, they're claiming that it's this thing, but it's this other piece. I think that, like, that is a, I don't know. It's probably across the board in the technology space that we have that kind of situation. But I like that. Like, that's a good term to be able to, like, explain that as a cognitive dissonance. So I thank you for bringing that up. But the one that I have not heard of, psychological safety. So that's, I can kind of guess what that's something that's missed me. So can you give me, like, a brief, like, overview of what that is? Because that's not really something that we've talked about much here in like my sphere, I guess.
No, and it's emerging, right? And so even when I took the stage to give my TED Talk, and I was trying my hardest to describe encryption and knowing I only had like 8 minutes to give the entire talk, that's the pocket where psychological safety really comes into play. It means you have my back, I have your back. We may disagree and that's okay. Right? You are great at what you do. We assume good intent on a daily basis. And we're not here to undermine each other, right? It's understanding that there is a hierarchy, typically in organizations, some are more flat than others, but we respect the role by default, right? That is the default mode in our firewall as humans. If I'm going to bring you that respect, that equals respect. And so the only way you can do that is I have to feel safe coming to you. And the psychological aspect is more when we lean into those toxic components you were talking about, where it's more of a culture of gaslighting. Okay. Or diminishing security risk or concerns that are raised up to the top. Psychological safety is a concept that almost rebukes toxic culture. And it says, hey, your behavior is impacting the way I perform. It's impacting my motivation, and it's impacting my ability to be great at what I do and why I'm here. And if we can't find that middle ground because trust is important to me, then maybe this isn't the best fit. And that's okay. Right. But when you have patterns of behavior of pushing people out, of being the smartest person in the room, even though you're saying I'm not the smartest person in the room, right? That cognitive dissonance again, it just makes it difficult because executive leadership, there's no shortage of CISOs, CIOs, other C-suite execs saying, hey, culture change, culture change, culture change. Great. They're leading with it. But then when you get to the pockets below, that's where you really need to consider who's burnt out, who's been through so many rounds of gaslighting, and they're just in sheer survival mode. That's psychological safety. Having a leader that can identify, oh, crud, I had 3 team members burn out in a 6-month period during 2025. Those are the types of leaders, those are the types of observations that create psychological safety. It's saying, hey, I know you just lost a family member. Don't want to get too squishy about it. How are you doing? Right? Hey, I know your kid was out sick. Thank you for finishing out the day remotely. How is she doing? How is he doing? How are they doing? It's bringing in empathy as a tool, not a crutch. Right. I know we over-rotated in empathetic leadership for a little bit about 5 years ago. This is saying that honesty without empathy is cruelty. find your empathy, even if you have to learn it. And that's what helps create psychological safety. Without that, high-performing teams struggle to perform at peak consistently. And that's what the research shows. So how do we do more of that? We adopt it as a trait. We lean into maybe executive coaching, if that's available to you, or mentoring, right, in the spaces and the circles we're in, to say, hey, help me understand how to bring empathy into my leadership style, genuinely. Because there's also those of us that we can clock when it's genuine and when it's not. So, and sometimes you're really trying, but because it's not refined, it does come across as a little disingenuous until you've really built that skill. But again, empathetic leader, right? I know that. I'm working on it. I'm also working on assumptions and not making them. But understanding I am human, humans are flawed. And thereby, not perfect. So if we're in these consistent, like, high stress situations, and you identify a team member that is hypercritical on self, but you're also a hypercritical leader, it's an exercise of asking yourself, all right, how do I alleviate that? Not, well, yeah, I'm hypercritical, but so are you. What's the byproduct, though? Because you're my leader. You're my manager. You're the person that when the buck stops or there's an incident, right? You're who I'm calling in. And it should be vice versa. I know I don't work in incident response anymore, but we work in risk, right? It's finding out who to your left and your right you want next to you when the technology fails, when there's a breach, when the stakes are high, when we need to determine if, whoa, nope, this is a black swan event versus, oh no, we've seen this before, right? Let's bring the temperature down and have a more strategic conversation. That's what psychological safety aims to do and clarify, instead of it being these, I don't know, less than genuine connections.
Yeah. And I've come up through like the traditional university approach of learning software engineering, and like software, like that path is more about like, well, how do you build software? It's not necessarily like all these squishy, like soft skills that people always talk about. And I think that's like so important, because like when I graduated, I went to work in a place and it had a toxic environment. And like, as a new, you know, person in the workforce, I was like, well, this is weird, but I don't know if this is normal. And like, it wasn't until I got to a good place where I was like, oh, this is clearly I was in a toxic workplace before. And I think that like this is like a spot that, like, I find all of these soft skill conversations really fascinating, because like these are super important and we should be like training more about, especially like managers, right? Like managers should have some sort of like mandatory requirement that says, well, you need to at least know about like empathy and the psychological safety concept, which I now like I'm going to start preaching about everywhere I can do it. Because like that is like a huge gap, like within the industry at large, right? Because like, I've worked in good places, I've worked in crummy places, and that is clearly like the difference between what's a good place to work for and what's a crummy place.
100%. And to take the tech out of it and to make it less about cybersecurity and make it more relatable, just think about raising children. And I'm not assuming that everyone is in the space of raising children. It's not for the faint of heart, okay? But you have to create a level of trust that your children will come to you when they need you. And when it's critical, and when you as a parent are looking at your partner or your friend or whoever you're talking to, and you're like, oh my God, I'm so grateful they came to me. That's what we're talking about at our core. And that is what's needed, because I agree with you. I came up in a less than traditional way. I came up through the United States Army. And here I am today, right? I did a secondary degree on the back end during consulting. Like, it was very non-traditional. I've worked for great leaders. I've worked for less than great leaders. I've been a less than great leader, right? And my goal is to become a better leader, because that's, right, self-improvement and growth. When we get stuck in this trap of believing we're the best, that's exactly what it is. And that's a reflection point. It's like, no, let's look at that a little closer. Because if your team members are burning out, if there are indirect comments being made about your team or your leadership style, you need to take a knee. You need to talk to your mentors. You need to lean on your advisors, and you need to find out how to course correct. I had to do that going into my current role, right? It's not that I haven't had success. I have. The one thing that could have made it better that's echoed by my mentors was interpersonal skills. And that's what I'm in a consistent growth to improve day over day.
Yeah. And so I should say, thank you for your service. Like, I always try to make sure that, like, I say that to our service members. But I think, like, the other thing that I really kind of like clicked with in that little section was, you were talking about how, like, you're becoming like a better like leader. Right. And like, I found that like the good leaders always are trying to get better. They don't think that they're perfect and that they're always trying to grow. And that's like another like piece that's like really important, especially even if you're like not a leader, if you're like within an organization, always be like striving to do better, essentially. I think I know I'm a better person than I was like 10 years ago. So that's hopefully exactly that has helped. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll be back after this word from our sponsors. Building PHP applications is your passion. Managing cloud infrastructure shouldn't be your headache. Displace is your partner in cloud infrastructure orchestration, giving solo developers and small teams the tools and automation to deploy enterprise-grade Kubernetes clusters without enterprise-grade complexity or cost. Their CLI tool streamlines everything from local development to fully managed cloud deployments on AWS, Azure, GCP, and more. Skip the steep learning curve of Docker, Kubernetes, and Terraform. Let our automation free you to focus on your core business without losing control over your infrastructure. Get started at displace.tech and discover how the right tools can eliminate the need for a full DevOps team. So you have a book that you're writing about this trust protocol. And can you talk to me about like how that happened? Because it sounds like it was involved with your TEDx talk. Like, what is the story behind that?
Actually, that was completely separate. Back in 2024, I was approached by somebody I do look up to in industry. His name is Andres, and he was looking to publish another book or his first book, and it was the CISO Playbook. And he'd reached out and he was like, hey, do you want to co-author a few chapters on, you know, measuring risk, the importance, right? Governance, risk, and compliance. I'm like, yeah, like absolutely. I would be honored. That would be great. So we did that. That was back in 24. And I loved how I felt post, like once that experience was over. So I found a coach. And that's how the TED Talk actually happened. The whole book offer after the TED Talk wasn't even related. I was sitting down at lunch with my coach. We just finished doing the event and we were talking next steps. Like, hey, what do you want to focus on next? And I'm like, hey, I really think there's a book here. Do you think there's a book here? And she's like, absolutely, there's a book here. There may be two books here. So I was like, okay, how did you do it? Right. Cause she's published. And she was like, well, I self-published. She's like, but I'm thinking for my next one, I might want to go with a publisher, right? Like there's a few ways we can go. And I was like, ooh, I really like that idea because we're in tech. Anybody can write a book with AI anymore. So I was like, ooh, I want to go the publisher route because then that kind of gives you reputation, brand, especially in cyber. Not even 60 days later, Scott, the company that published the CISO playbook reached out to publish the trust protocol. So that was insane. And then, yeah, trying to balance just working full time, being a full time mom, and getting that drafted, written, doing alt text. I know what that is now. That's kind of weird, but cool at the same time. That was a whirlwind for 2025. So I can't wait.
Yeah, my understanding is that like writing a book is like an undertaking. It's like having, you know, a second job essentially while you're working on the book. I know people who have done it and they say like it not only is it like a lot of work, but there's like a huge, it takes forever. Like it's just like an impossibly long process to like review it, make edits, typeset it. And it's just like over and like so I applaud you for doing that because it sounds like it takes a special person.
We're in the editing pocket right now. So yeah. I'm sure there's going to be rounds and more iterations. But yeah, it took 2 months to just even get it submitted And then even while you're submitting, you're redrafting, you're tweaking, you're making sure the images are just right. So, but yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I didn't see myself doing a TED Talk and writing a book in 1 year.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you just never know, right? Like, it opportunity knocks and you just have to kind of answer the door when it does. So that's always the way to go. So is there any, I unfortunately have to say goodbye to you today because we're getting close to the end of our time. Is there anything that you want to direct our listeners to before I let you go?
Sure. So if you want to learn more about the Trust Protocol or me in general, I am kind of like Humble Roots, but you can Google me. You'll probably find most of my podcast content on YouTube. A lot of my thought leadership along with my TED Talk is pinned to my LinkedIn. Don't hesitate to reach out, and I can't wait for all of you to hear my opening keynote at the conference later this year in May.
Yes, and tickets are still available, so please grab them when you can. At least at the time of this recording, tickets are still available, but please grab them. They're still available. So thank you, Naya, for finding some time to talk to us today, and thank you. We're looking forward to your keynote later this year.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say another heartfelt thank you to Naya for all of her time and also for yours for listening. If you're not already a subscriber, make sure you subscribe on your preferred platform and leave us a review while you're in there. It does help other people find us. This podcast is available both in an audio version on the PHP Architect website and a video version on our YouTube channel. This is Scott Keckborn for the PHP Architect Community Corner signing off and reminding you to keep listening, keep coding, and keep reading.